One night we were flying CAP again, and we happened to notice something strange. We were right off the coast at Natrang. We'd just taken off, turned left, and there's a little island off to the south called Hontre Island, and to the left, where the mainland was fairly flat, and then there was an inlet, and then there was a pretty steep hill or mountain all along that inlet on the other side, on the east side. And we were looking down, and the navigator said, "Hey, you see that down there?" And I said, "What?" He said, "Look at the tracers." And there were tracers going from the water to the land and from the land to the water. So I said, "Better scan the FM radio and see if somebody's in trouble down there." And sure enough, we got a call. This is Mustang. We're a Navy gunboat, and we're trapped in an inlet off the train. Is anybody around that can help us? And I said, "We're right above you. What can we do for you?" And he said, I love that T6.
Tri-motor?
I think they pay them to take off every hour just to get that sound here.
Every 20 minutes.
Every 20 minutes? Anyway, I got clearance to fire. The guy said they had come into the inlet because they saw some activity, and what it was the bad guys were loading a bunch of supplies on the beach, and there were a bunch of them over there. And they got caught, but they got trapped. They couldn't get out. I said, "Well, we fixed that." And we had to, I was actually on my second to the last aircraft commander check, I think it might have been my aircraft commander check, because there was a check pilot in the right seat. So I said, his name was Lou Long Henry. I said, "Major Long Henry, I'm going to have to do something different." I said, "I want to get your permission to do this." He said, "What's that?" I said, "We can't make left turns here because..." And you know, the guns are on the left side, so we had to fire on the left side. But the mountains were too close, and if we'd have made left turns, we'd have been at 500 feet over those guys half the time, and that's too close to intensive ground fire for this thing. So I said, "Let's do it a little different. We'll make a hard right turn and make parallel strafing runs." So I had to brief my crew because they expected to be doing left turns, you know. And I said, "Now, guys, once we do a little firing pattern, I'm going to make a hard right turn about 45 degrees and get us back around and down at the end of the inlet and come back, and we'll just work that mountainside over that way." And that worked real good. The first time, this is another one of the ironies over there. The first time I lined up, I was just getting ready to fire, and there was a little blink of light, and it was right in the center of my target, of my pipper, of my sight. I squeaked. That was a guy firing at me from the ground. That was ground fire. So I said, "Oh, it's not his day." So I fired. I pushed the button, and the whole mountainside lit up. I mean, it was there. Must I don't know how many were out there, but a lot of them. To make a long story short, we spent about 4.5 hours on that target. That's a long time to hang around an enemy target, but we spent about 4.5 hours that night cleaning up that area. We got some secondaries off the shoreline, I guess it was fuel and stuff they'd stored there, and it was a very exciting mission. After we had 21,000 rounds a load, like I said, so after we expended our ammunition, I told the guy, I said, "Listen, we can see the runway. We're not but 3 minutes from landing. We'll go land, and we'll get some more ammo and flares, and we'll be back." So I told the crew, and we called ahead and had them ready for us. And those, I'll tell you what, those guys in the back were heroes that night. They loaded, reloaded that airplane in 10 minutes. Full load of ammunition and more flares. We had plenty of fuel we could fly all night. But we were back to the target in 20 minutes.
And how many rounds did you fire that night?
Well, we expended our rounds a second time and went back for a third time. And I told the guys in the boat when we came back, I said, "This is it, guys. It's almost daylight. And I know it's been fun. We've been having a good time playing with these guys, but it's time to get out of here." And so I said, when I start my pass on the... from the north end of the inlet, you take off, you get going. And I told the guys, I said, let's just do it now. I said, give me three guns at fast rate. Oh, boy. So here we go down this inlet at fast rate. And I said, be careful. Y'all hang on back there. So these guys take off in the boat. And we're going along this inlet, shooting up against this mountain. And I'm wagging the wings about 15 to 20 degrees. It looked like a garden hose. That you could see the tracers. Every fifth round was a tracer, so it looked like a steady tongue of fire going out there. And we just saturated that hill. Went back and landed. We had fired 63,000 rounds that night.
And the boat got out?
And
that
what? The Navy guy got out of there. And I'm proud to say that the entire crew was put in for the Distinguished Flying Cross for that mission. But the next day, as a smart aleck first lieutenant in intelligence, he said, well, looks like we got a new Death Valley Dave. I said, well, you can't call me that. That was his. He said, well, you're Trigger Trahan.
That was the nickname.
Yeah. You thought it was going to be something exciting, didn't you?
Well, I was hoping. Dick, when you came back from World War II, when you came back from war to the United States, how were you greeted by the public?
Yeah. Well, as far as those remember, I've been treated very nicely.
How well were you welcomed home? Hmm? How well were you welcomed home to the United States when you came back from combat?
Well, we got into Florida. Our orders were to Washington, D.C. There were no passes or anything left on the train going to Washington. And we just have, this is a group of about seven of us. And there was a mailman who overheard us. He worked in the rail car. We were talking about not being able to get to Washington. And he says, I can take care of you. And so we rode from Washington, from Florida, to Washington, D.C., in the rail car, which was fine. We probably were ridden donkeys.
But the fact was, you were appreciated. Yeah, you were appreciated when you came home.
Yeah.
How's that compare with how you were welcomed home or not, Mike?
Well, David, it was a great surprise to me. Of course, we didn't have any idea when we were over there what was going on here in the States. And this, we're talking 1969, 1970. And I came home and I was out processed. That was my last day in the Air Force when I flew my last mission over there. And when I out processed, they said, listen, are you wearing your uniform home? I said, yeah, of course. I'm proud of wearing, to wear my uniform. They said, well, get ready. And I out processed in Washington, in Tacoma, and then went up to Seattle to fly home. And the reception at the airport was horrible. I mean, they call us baby killers, and, it was just bad. So I got on the airplane. I flew home. I kissed my beautiful wife, Sheila, and our little baby. And I went home that night and hung my uniform in the closet and forgot about it. And I said, okay, that's done. I never spent a minute thinking about what I had done or anything. I just turned my eyes toward getting a job with the airline, and that was it. This went on for years and years and years, David. And I never had any appreciation for what I did or for what we did over there.
How did you work through this?
I just forgot it. I compartmentalized it, I guess. It came back later, believe me. But this mission I just told you about, that in the train, the gunboat, Spooky and Mustang and Spooky. One night, Oh, come on, man.
Yeah.
Now Dust Off is here.
Yeah.